Welcome to Carib Scene. I'm your host, Lucia Bates, president of Caribbean American Heritage Foundation of Texas and principal of LB Marketing Solutions. Carib Scene provides a unique opportunity to discuss issues affecting our Caribbean community and to share ideas and solutions to help us deal with those issues. If you'd like to be a guest on the show or just want to share your views, please email us at caribscene@gmail.com. Please welcome our guest today, Rosalyn Alexis, a practicing attorney from the law office of the said name. Good evening, Rosalyn. How are you?
Good evening, Lucia. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for agreeing to chat with me today after such a long day at work today.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. The pleasure is mine. Yeah, it has been a long day, but this is typical for me.
That's good. Today we're discussing legal issues facing Caribbean nationals, and I believe that you, Rosalyn, with firsthand experience, would be qualified to share some of those issues with our listening audience. First, can you tell me a little bit about yourself?
I'm originally from Haiti. I left Haiti at a very young age. I was actually 10 years old, and I was raised in Jackson, Mississippi. I went to college to Jackson State University, and after college, I came to Houston, Texas for law school, and I am the mother of two beautiful boys. As you mentioned, my profession is an attorney. I'm practicing law full-time, but my passion is, I guess you would call it, charity work. I am heavily involved with the reconstruction in Haiti.
How long have you lived in Houston?
I have been in Houston since 2004. Yes, since 2004, I did the 3 years of law school here, and then I accepted a position with a pretty well-established international law firm in Dallas. I was with them for 2 years, and where I did corporate work, and after that, I transitioned back to Houston. So I guess in Houston, a total of maybe 6 years.
Okay, great. You did mention that you're the proud mother of two beautiful boys. How old are your sons?
Well, my oldest son is 9, and my baby just celebrated his 3rd birthday. We just had a birthday celebration for him this past Saturday.
Are they involved in any sports?
The 3-year-old, he emulates his older brother, so whatever he sees his older brother does, he wants to do it. Yes, my older one is very active. He's actually in a basketball camp currently, and he plays soccer, and he's also played volleyball and football and every other sport you can think of.
Well, I think that explains why they keep you so busy.
Exactly.
Do you have any family back home in Haiti?
Yes. Most of my relatives are still in Haiti, with the exception of my mom and my father who are in the States. I also have an older brother who lives in Michigan, but the remainder of my family are still in Haiti.
Well, tell me, what inspired you to become an attorney?
It was my last year of undergrad, my studies in undergrad. And being from Haiti, being from a very, very poor village in Haiti, when I was in Haiti, I didn't have the opportunity to go to school. As a matter of fact, when I came to the States at the age of 10, I couldn't read and write because I had never gone to school in Haiti. So I remember as a young girl, I used to pray to God, if you were to give me the opportunity to just get an education, I would go as far as I could. I would never stop. So when I came to the States and realized that education was free, I took great advantage of that opportunity. So upon, I think, my last semester of my undergrad studies, I wanted to just, okay, what could I do next? I wanted to go into the FBI Academy. At that time, I wasn't a U.S. citizen, so I wasn't qualified. And I have a very, very good friend his father is an attorney, and he also wanted to go to law school. And we were just discussing one day, okay, what am I going to do next? What would my graduate studies entail? And he told me, Rosalyn, I believe you would be a great attorney. I told him, well, I don't know, because I've never been introduced to any attorneys at this point of my life. He said, well, just shadow me for a couple of weeks and see if you like it. And I believe if you like it, you would be a great lawyer. And so that's what I did for a couple of weeks. I would go to his parents' law firm, and I would accompany them to court. And I fell in love with what they do. And so that's when I decided this is what I want to do. Yes. That was it. Decided this is what I wanted to do. So I did really well as far as my grades, my GPA, and I took the exam, the law school admission exam. Actually, I didn't do so well the first time, so I didn't get into any law school the first year. So I graduated, worked for a year. I started off as a teacher, teaching eighth grade English. That didn't go so well, so I took a position as a counselor at the school. The second year, I took a training course, and I took the LSAT again, did really well. And I actually was accepted into Ole Miss Law School, Thurgood Marshall, and Howard Law in D.C. Ole Miss is a very good school, but I knew that I needed to get out of Mississippi, and I needed an opportunity to get out of Mississippi. So Ole Miss was out of the question. Howard was just a little too expensive for me. And so I chose Houston. That's how I ended up in Houston.
Perseverance, right?
Perseverance, that's all it takes. First, it takes a dream, and then you have to persevere towards that dream.
Wow. So where did you complete your education? Was that in Houston?
Oh, yes. I went to Thurgood Marshall School of Law, TSU.
At Thurgood. Okay. How long did it take you when you finally got to the decision that that's what you wanted to do?
Law school is 3 years. I finished law school in 3 years, and I did pretty well.
Very good. Did you specialize in immigration law, and are you practicing any other disciplines?
Immigration law is something I've always done. I was part of Catholic Charities growing up. They were my legal guardian. So when I was emancipated from the program at the age of 17, I became, when I finished around my second year of college, I was what is called a cultural specialist. So I handled a lot of immigration work for other refugees and other immigrants. So immigration is something that I was doing even prior to law school. But when I finished law school, I never thought I would do immigration law. I started off with a large firm doing commercial transactions. And when I left, I didn't even think about immigration work until when a good friend of mine got in some troubles with the law, and he's immigrant, and so I had to defend him, and that's when I realized, okay, this is really what I want to do. I really enjoy helping people maneuver through this very difficult legal process, which it can often be.
Can you tell our audience, some people really don't know the difference between having a green card and having citizenship?
Oh, well, as a green card holder, you're classified as a resident of the United States. You can live, you can go, you can work, you can do pretty much anything. Well, most of everything that a citizen can do, but there are certain limitations. Of course, one of the big ones is you cannot vote. Another one is you can't, just certain government jobs that you cannot take because they require you to be a U.S. citizen. And as a resident, you can't decide to, okay, I'm going to live in another country for 2 or 3 years. You may eventually lose your residency. Immigration may classify it as abandonment of your residency. They may deem that you have established your residency somewhere else. And then compare that to a U.S. citizen. Once you're a U.S. citizen, you're a U.S. citizen. It's very limited situations where that can be revoked. One of the major ones, as we can see, is the Tata situation, with the child, the burden of the daycare situation, her U.S. citizenship was revoked. But those situations are very limited. So once you become a U.S. citizen, it's as if you were born here. The only limitation is you cannot become a U.S. citizen because that you cannot become the U.S. president of the United States. Because that required you to have been born in the U.S. As you were mentioning, how do you become a U.S. citizen? The general rule is you would have had to have a green card for at least 5 years. And you have to go through an interviewing process. There you have to take an oral as well as a written exam. If you were married to a U.S. citizen for the last 3 years, then you can get your U.S. citizenship within 3 years rather than the 5 years. And then one may ask, how do you get your green card? As you mentioned, typically somebody has to sponsor you to get a green card. It can be a family, or it can be an employer. The other ways you can get a green card is if you have a large amount of money, you may want to invest in a business in the United States, you can get your green card that way. And the fourth way that one can go about getting a green card to become a U.S. permanent resident is what is called a lottery. It is just what it sounds like. Certain countries, if you're eligible, you just go into the system, you enter your name, and randomly, if your name is chosen, you get a green card to come to the United States.
Can you also use education and asylum in case there's war in your country and you've got to flee? Can you use that also to try to get a green card?
Yes, yes. Asylum and refugee. Refugee and asylum are technically the same thing. The only difference is they classify you as a refugee if you're outside of the United States, and once you've entered the United States, you're considered an asylee. Yes. So if there are certain classified reasons why you feel that you or your family's life is endangered in order for you to stay in your country or to be forced back into your country, the Constitution has warrant you certain protections where if you can prove these things beyond a reasonable doubt, then you will be granted asylum, political asylum here. And after you've been granted political asylum for a year, then you can apply for your green card. It would be the same process for someone who's outside of the country, and we will refer to those as refugees.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Rosalyn. We will now take a short break. You're listening to Carib Scene Radio Show. Please feel free to send us your comments at caribscene@gmail.com. We'll be right back after these messages.
Following is an important message from President Clinton and President Bush.
In January, Haiti experienced an environmental catastrophe and human tragedy of epic proportion.
But thanks in part to the generous spirit of the American people, the country of Haiti has survived. But now the people need to thrive. President Clinton and I have seen firsthand the power of your contributions at work.
The Clinton Bush Haiti Fund is on the ground, funding programs that create jobs, teach skills, and assist local businesses.
Our fund is dedicated to supporting initiatives that encourage local entrepreneurs and help build an inclusive economy that lifts up everyone.
Help us continue this work so the people of Haiti have an opportunity to prosper.
Thank you.
To donate, go to ClintonBushHaitiFund.org or text QUAKE to 20222 to give $10. Message and data rates may apply. Brought to you by the Clinton Bush Haiti Fund and the Ad Council.
LB Marketing Solutions is a full-service, affordable advertising agency that helps businesses like yours succeed. Our marketing solutions fit every budget. We are a nationally certified WBENZ company. Please call us today at 281-352-2593 or visit us at lbmarketingsolutions.com. LB Marketing Solutions. Let us take you to the next level.
Welcome back to Carib Scene. I'm your host, Lucia Bates, and today we're chatting with attorney Rosalyn Alexis, who has given us very insightful information about legal issues facing Caribbean nationals in the diaspora. Before the break, we were discussing the differences between the green cards and citizenships. Roslyn, what are the advantages of going to an attorney when filing your citizenship rather than trying to do it yourself?
There are many advantages. One is to have someone who understands the process, who knows exactly what immigration is looking for, to handle the case for you. One, I know most of my clients, they come, they just don't want to deal with the headache of having to deal with immigration or anyone else. And sometimes the case may seem straightforward, but issues pop up, because when there are times when you have issues that go far back as well, when you entered the country and your application outside of the country, your application for a visa, for a tourist visa, and if you had made any mistakes even then, and sometimes it can be 10 years, 20 years, and if there's any inconsistency, that can create great deals of problems. So if you go to an attorney, a competent immigration attorney, that person would have had the ability, they would know what questions to ask you in order to prepare you, or if these consistencies would come up, and know how to answer these inconsistencies without subjecting you to any further problems with immigration. There has been in situations where someone will go for an citizenship interview and INS will pick them up and lock them at the detention center and put them in deportation proceedings because certain things they have done in the past, they weren't aware of it, or they totally forgot about it, and that didn't match with their current application. And now immigration is really tough. There's a lot of pressure on the government to do something about immigration, and they're not quite sure what to do. So any little mistakes that you make now, it can cost you a lot. So my recommendation is, even if it's to have someone to give you the initial advice for you to just come to an attorney's office, just tell them everything, and then they can guide you. I've been able to do that with my clients where most of the time I handle the entire process for them, the gathering of the information, the filling out the application, preparing them for the test, and also accompanying them to the interview. There are times I don't do all that. There may be a client that doesn't need all of my services. They just need me for the gathering of the documents and preparing the application. So I would recommend to anyone who has any doubt of what they have said and how they said anything to just consult someone before they submit any application to immigration.
Well, that's very good advice. On a typical day, when a client comes to you with an immigration problem, generically speaking, what would that entail?
Ooh, you know, that's what makes what I do so interesting. As typical as you think it could be, is never the same. The story is never the same. You may have a marriage-based case. You may have a client that comes in and say, okay, I want to adjust my status for my F1. I came in as a student. I finished school and I fell in love with someone. What can I do? And I have to advise them on that. Or you may have a sibling who've called, okay, my sister, the ICE just came and knocked on our door. Someone came and knocked on our door and said they were delivering pizza. We opened the door. When we opened the door, they asked, are you so-and-so? We said, yes. They asked, could we step outside? We step outside, and they handcuffed him, took him down to the detention center. So the story is always, although the issues, the subject lining may be the same, but the facts, the specific facts of the case are always different. And that's what makes it so fascinating to me. It's like each day you never know who or what would walk through the door.
Do you find many clients who've lived here for a while and never pursued citizenship? Why do you think they have not pursued citizenship?
you know, at times it is a tough call, particularly our people from the West Indies, from the Caribbean. We love who we are. We love where we're from. And although we love this country too, we don't want to give that piece of connection with that country, which is to give up our nationality. And sometimes most people have never had a reason to become a U.S. citizen. Come to find out, most of us do it for job-related reasons, because we want to immigrate some of our relatives into the country. So you have those who've never been put in that position, and so they've never really had the desire or had the need to give up their nationality.
What would your advice be to them? Is this something that they should be scared about, or is it something they can consider having dual citizenship, or is it just a personal preference?
I think that's a personal call. There are so many advantages of being a U.S. citizen. I listed some of those at the beginning of the broadcast. But it's a personal call. And if you are in need of that, I would say go for it. But if you're not in need of becoming a U.S. citizen, you can be a green card holder for the rest of your life. You understand, as long as you do not get into any trouble with the laws. But one thing people need to be cautious of, as a green card holder, if you have committed certain crime, then you are subject to being removed from the country. So, and that's where being a U.S. citizen would protect you. Let's say we have a domestic violence type of case, okay? That immigration classifies it as a crime of moral turpitude. And if you are convicted of that, and immigration conviction is totally different from what we think conviction is. For immigration, a conviction can be just a plea. A conviction can be probation. You understand? So I tell people to be very careful. But if you are convicted of a crime of moral turpitude, then you are deemed deportable. You understand? And so then someone would have to hire an attorney that would try to fight to have them to stay into this country. So there are so many perks into being a U.S. citizen. But I've spoken with many clients who are very hesitant. They say, well, I really don't want to give up my citizenship. And I never urge anyone to do anything. I just let them know, okay, these are the advantages of being a U.S. citizen versus being a permanent resident. And the option is up to them. The option is up to them.
Right. Thank you so much for the lesson, Rosalyn. This is so important. The information you've given us tonight, it is extremely important. And I think our audience would really appreciate the fact that you're helping us understand immigration a lot better. And I know that just the information, you know, you've said a few things tonight that I was not aware of, so this is really good. In case someone needs your help, we can definitely refer them to you. Please let the audience know, how can we reach you?
Yes, actually they can just call my number, which is 281-857-9335. My office is located on Fondren. The address is 1003 Fondren Road. The suite number, the office number is 400. That is in Houston, Texas. The code is 77096. Once again, telephone 281-857-9335. My fax is 832-415-0252, or the physical address is 1003 Fondren, suite 400, Houston, Texas, 77096.
Okay. Rosalyn, I've got a question. If we've got a student listening tonight that's contemplating law school, they may want to know how many years it takes typically to become an attorney and what challenges they may encounter during that process. Can you help with that?
Sure. To become an attorney, you first have to have at least a bachelor's degree. As you know, a bachelor's degree requires a minimum of 4 years, at least that. And once you have that, you have to do 3 years of law school, a minimum of 3 years of law school. And after you've completed your 3 years of law school, then you have to take a bar exam, which is individualized by state. And once you've taken the pass the bar exam, you are licensed to legally practice law in the state. Challenges of law school itself. Law school is very, very intense and very difficult, particularly the first year of law school. That's when you learned almost everything you would need to know to become a lawyer. Almost all the subject matters are taught that particularly first year. So anyone who's interested in going to law school, it is a great profession. It is one of those professions where you have the ability to really do some good, because you have the capacity to sort of make rules and regulations and just help transform your society. And I am very, very humbled to be part of this great profession. But it is hard work, just as with any profession, I believe. So first year is very, very intense. You have to be ready to commit your entire first year to just studying law. You study 12, 15, or even more hours a day. But it pays off. It pays off if you do what you're supposed to do the first year. Second year gets a little easier, and in your third year, it's not as bad, and you would be prepared to take the bar exam. So anyone who's interested from the Caribbean, particularly in Houston, anything I can do to be a mentor to you, to just give you some of the advice, whatever capacity I can serve, I am available because I know a lot of people have reached out to me to help me to become where I am today, and I owe this to my community to do the same.
We're going to take a short break, but before we take that short break, I believe that success is either self-driven or the result of an awesome support system. What motivated your success, Rosalyn?
What motivates me? I get my inspiration from any and everybody. My motivation, of course, my children, is that young woman or their young man who's there to beat the odds. Is anyone who's doing the unthinkable to break through in life. It's the Oprah Winfrey's. When I say Oprah Winfrey's, because everybody knows of Oprah. It's someone who's there to make a difference. It's that little child who's not from a big name. Nobody knows their parents, and that child has worked so hard to go to school, and that child is the president of the United States. So I get my inspiration from those type of people, from those people who have the ability to keep going and to take the challenges of life with a smile on their faces.
Great. Thank you so much. We will now take a short break. You're listening to the Carrot Scene Radio Show. My name is Lucia Bates. Please feel free to send us your comments at carrotscene@gmail.com. We'll be right back after these messages.
This station is a proud partner of the Caribbean American Heritage Foundation of Texas. We are a nonprofit organization whose core mission is to highlight and celebrate the rich culture of Caribbean citizens in the United States. We are collaborating with various organizations in Texas and around our great nation to organize events that will spotlight our heritage and our people. We welcome you to visit us at www.caribbeanheritagetx.org. And don't forget that June is Caribbean American Heritage Month in the U.S. Let's celebrate it together. One Caribbean, one culture.
Hi, this is Rachel McNeil with KPRC Local 2, inviting you to come mix and mingle with the Caribbean Heritage Foundation of Texas and other members of our community at the Jamaica House Restaurant. Come vibe to the sweet Caribbean sounds of steel pan extraordinaire Ronnie Perry as we enjoy great Caribbean appetizers provided by Jamaica House. Our keynote speaker is Dr. Lewis Brown, Honorable Counsel of Barbados. great food, great atmosphere, and great people. Don't miss this one. Bring your smile and plenty of business cards. We look forward to seeing you, and bring a friend or two.
Welcome back to Carrot Scene. I'm your host, Lucia Bates. And today we're chatting with attorney Rosalyn Alexis, who, before the break, was telling us a little bit about what motivated her to become an attorney. Rosalyn, I would be remiss if I did not discuss the devastation that Haiti encountered and how the residents are still struggling to recover. How was your family affected, and how are they currently doing?
Well, thankfully, my family were all accounted for. Most of them were in Port-au-Prince. 92% of them lost their homes, but they are here. Everybody's safe and sound, so I am grateful for that. However, like so many Haitians, they have lost all of their possessions. In terms of what I'm doing for Haiti, I'm involved in the permanent development of Haiti. I started a nonprofit organization. It's called HERO, and HERO stands for Haitian Empowerment Relief Organization. And the reason I started HERO is because right after the earthquake, I realized that there were so many relief aid being poured into Haiti. But I also realized that once Haiti was no longer the number one news topic, the cameras would move away from Haiti and people would slowly and quickly forget about Haiti. And at the same time, I know Haiti needed some permanent development work in order to lift itself out of this situation. And I realized that the only way I could make the impact that I feel that my country needs is to mobilize a team or a group. And so that's how HERO was birthed. HERO is a 501c3. We are operated by a board of directors. And our mission is to focus on the rural communities of Haiti. These communities are often neglected by the Haitian government as well as the international aid, because most of the international aid go into the Port-au-Prince and the Port-au-Prince surrounded area. So what we have done is we've taken a small village outside, on the outskirts of Port-au-Prince, well, actually away from Port-au-Prince. And this little village is called La Suze. La Suze is actually part of the larger island in Haiti, which is called La Gonave. La Gonave is west of Port-au-Prince. The population of La Gonave is about 100,000 people, give or take. And La Suze, which is the village within La Gonave, is a population of about 3,000 people. And what we've done with this little village, we are trying to take this village and use it as a model in making it self-sustainable and then replicate our work in hopefully different villages. This particular village is one of the most beautiful places in Haiti. The beach is just beautiful, coconut trees, the mountain, just breathtaking beauty. However, at the same time, it is considered the poorest village in Haiti. There's no type of sanitation. There's no electricity, no running water. What was most terrifying is in this particular village, they had one little primary school that went up to the fifth grade. And after the fifth grade, the children in that particular village and surrounding villages were not able to continue their education. And unfortunately, that's the story you hear over and over in Haiti, where children do not have access to education. So when we went to Haiti, our board members, the chair of our board, Mark Junkins, myself, we met with the director of HERO in Haiti. And so we held several town hall meetings in different villages in La Gonave. And the village that touched our heart the most was La Suze. So when we did the town halls, we asked the people, how could we be of assistance? How could we help them accomplish their goals and their desire? They had many needs. They need help with roads. They need health care. They need everything you can think of, clean running water. They don't have access to any of that. Food is a luxury. But they told us that their number one project, their priority, was school, education. They realized that without an education, their children and themselves, they would continue to be in this perpetual state of poverty and despair. They realized that education was the key to a better future. So they asked Hero, could you please help us start a secondary school? This was in June, and they said, well, by the way, school in Haiti starts in October. We would like to have our school in October. Okay, so we said, okay, so this is the end of June. You want a school in October. So where's the school building? And they told us, well, by the way, we don't have a school building. So we had to come back and get to work, roll up our sleeves. Within 3 months, we were able to raise enough funds to build a school. Not only did we build a school, we opened that first secondary school in that particular village. Now we have close to 100 students who are getting a good quality education, secondary education. So that's one area Hero is focusing on, education. Another area we want to do work in is economic development. Not that we're feeding them their minds, we're educating them, but we also need to give them the ability to grow their own food, to generate income for themselves, and at the same time, so they won't continue to depend on outside sources to continue to send things to them. So my heart is in Haiti, but my commitment to Haiti is long-term. I only want to do work in Haiti that would help the people in Haiti to stand on their own. Relief aid is still needed in Haiti. It is important, but Haiti has been in a relief mode for 60 or 100 years. It is now time to surpass the relief and move into the reconstruction of Haiti. We're looking into bringing some investors with us. I'm heading to Haiti in April 18th with Surprise Sherazade, who is a mentor, an advisor to Hero, and he's part of the Houston Rotary, the Bel Air Southwest Rotary Club, and I'm also a member of that club. We also have a member from that club, Mr. Don Beckner, who's traveling with us. And we have three investors who are traveling with us in a couple of weeks. We're going to look at this particular place in Haiti, and we're also going to Cape Haitian to look at the different commercial ventures. How can investors get involved in Haiti where we can get the people engaged, give the people jobs, so that people can have the money to send their children to school to create their own destiny. So that's where my heart is. That's where my commitment is. And that's how I'm helping Haiti.
That is great. Caribbean American Heritage Foundation of Texas is an organization which is nonprofit, and it was established exclusively to partner with, to collaborate, and to assist organizations such as yours to achieve your goals and objectives.
Great.
Whether it be fundraising, filling in as a liaison, or whatever, any opportunities that we can partner with you, we gladly, you know, want you to know that we are available to do so.
I will take you up on that. I will take you up on that. And I must mention, there has been some great organizations who've been helping us. For example, the Jamaican Foundation, when we went to them and told them we wanted to open the school, they had us to come at one of their meetings. In there, they raised a good amount of money for us. So we are grateful. We are grateful to so many people who have believed in us. And as someone has mentioned, well, there's so much needs in Haiti. I'm just one little person. I can't do anything. I can't really make an impact. Well, what I tell these people is, one person cannot fix Haiti or one person cannot fix the world, but collectively we are each part of the puzzle. Haiti is a puzzle. There are different pieces out there, and we each have our responsibility. When I say Haiti, we're just speaking of Haiti. I feel that as a human being, we owe the world. You understand? We should be giving back this great universe that we're living in. So when I say Haiti, people don't think we just focus on Haiti, but right now we're speaking of Haiti. So there's so much need in Haiti, but there is something that each and every one of us can do at a small scale. And that's exactly what HERO is doing. HERO is a very young organization. We don't have a lot of funding. We started off when we went to Haiti in June with $0 in our bank account. But we were able to come back, raise enough money to build a school. And not only to build a school, but we are paying teachers who have college education to teach these children. You understand? So there are things you can do at a small scale that will make a sustainable impact on the lives of these people. And that's why I tell everyone, it doesn't take a lot. When people ask, how can they help us? Well, we ask people to help sponsor our children. It costs us about $300 a year to educate these children. That would include tuition. That would include uniform. $300 a year. Someone may say, well, I don't have $300 a year right now. But let's break it down on a monthly basis. That is only $25 a month. Only $25 a month, which is two cups of Starbucks coffee. You would help educate a child who would otherwise would not have an opportunity to go to school.
Wow. You know, one of my girlfriends, Dr. Linda Lucombe, she's from Fort Myers, Florida. She was one of the doctors that responded so willingly to, you know, when the devastation occurred. And the story she told was so very heartbreaking, especially the many thousands of kids that became homeless. I've got a soft spot for kids because I always seem to think that kids didn't ask to be born, so the fact that they're here, it's our duty to take care of them. In light of other devastating things that have happened in other countries, around the world, do you think that Haiti has been forgotten?
I don't want to say Haiti's been forgotten because I believe that God is still in Haiti, and God is working his miracles in Haiti, and he will continue to do so. Just as when God was in Haiti in 1804 when we became the first black republic country in the world. Haiti has done what no other country has done in history, and I do believe that Haiti is being punished for that. We were the second oldest independent nation in this side of hemisphere after the United States. Haiti, a group of slaves, just imagine a group of slaves in the 1700s, being able to kick out at that time what was considered the most powerful country on earth, which was France. We unified enough to gain our independence. This is something that you can't even begin to process. And as a result of that, I believe that Haiti is being punished. Our history is so great. Haiti has paved the way for so many countries, but yet Haiti does not get the recognition that it deserves. However, I'm not going to say Haiti is forgotten. Maybe other countries have consciously or unconsciously decided not to help Haiti, but Haiti has so many resources. There's still a lot of manipulation being done in Haiti. If other countries would just let Haiti be, let the people rule, then I believe that Haiti would be able to help itself. But when, for example, I don't know if too many people know that because we gain our independence from France, we had to pay France back reparation. We had to pay them for getting our independence. And the last debt, we made the last payment in 1947, I believe, and that equaled to around $21 billion. So you wonder why Haiti is so poor. all of the money Haiti has been making has been going to repay France for getting its independence. And then you also had the U.S. who had gone into Haiti and occupied Haiti militarily for over 14 years. At that time, they kicked out the government. They did whatever they wanted to do with the country. So it's a lot about our history that if people really knew the history, people would understand why Haiti is the way Haiti is today. But I know God has not forgotten about Haiti. And I, like the Bible says, sometimes you just have to wait on the Lord. And we are waiting on the Lord, but at the same time, we are doing whatever we can to lift Haiti out of its position. But I'm positive that things will turn around.
Have you shared any of those struggles with your son, especially your older one? Have they visited Haiti with you since the earthquake? I know they've got to be proud of what you're doing. You're doing an awesome job.
Both of my children have been to Haiti. My older son, prior to the earthquake, he would go to Haiti every year with me. He's been to Haiti 5 times already. So he knows the country, he knows the history and everything. My older son has gone to Haiti once. Since the earthquake, I've not taken them because, as I mentioned, my family's house, everything were damaged. And so we haven't rebuilt to the point where I feel comfortable to take them. Okay, they have this house or things for them to stay in. And then so they haven't been back to Haiti since the earthquake. However, my older son, he's very heavily involved with HERO. He goes to our functions, and sometimes he puts on the presentation. Last time we had the luncheon, he was the one passing out the brochures. So my older one, he's very, very involved with Haiti. And if he was born here, but you ask him where he's from, he will tell you, "I'm from Haiti." And his friends would say, "Well, you're not from Haiti. Your parents are from Haiti." He said, "Well, that's what makes me Haitian. I was born in America, but I am a Haitian. I'm proud, you know." So that's how I'm raising them, and that's who they are. Because that's who Haiti will need
in the future. Well, you know, I've got to mention that Rosalind is bilingual. She speaks both English and French. Rosalind, have you taught your son French?
Yes, he does. They speak French. They understand more than they speak it, but in Creole also. So when I take them to Haiti, when I take my son to Haiti, I don't translate. He's able to communicate with the children with no problem.
That is excellent because, you know, I think we so often forget to pass along the languages to our children. It's sad because I've lived in Houston for, going on 33 years, and the most I have, you know, we speak Patois or Creole in St. Lucia. However, I learned all of what I speak right here in Texas.
Wow.
Not from my parents.
Yeah, and what we need to realize that any time a child can speak a different language, it really helps with the development of the child. And all you're doing is giving the child an extra gift in life. And my kids, I'm trying to teach them as much French as I can, and I'm enrolling them in Spanish. So we have to, if we have the ability to pass on a second language or a third language to our children, I think we should take advantage of that. And don't worry about, I've heard some people, believe it or not, they will speak with an accent. First of all, they're not going to speak with an accent, okay? And even if they did, okay, what is the big deal? But that's the excuse I've heard some parents say. These children, all they hear all day, every day at school, on TV, everything is English. This is their birth language, so there's no way they would speak it with an accent. And my personal opinion is if they do so well, so be it. It's not a big deal to me.
Let's switch gears just a little bit because we're getting close to the end of our broadcast. Rosalind, within the past 2 years, has the economy negatively impacted your business at all?
Yes, it has. Things are slower than they used to be. I used to do a lot of real estate, a lot of contract transactions, and that has slowed down. So yes, I would say it has in some ways, but then I'm someone who's always looking for an opportunity, and whatever the situation is, I have not found the opportunity yet in this economy, but I try to look in the positive side. Yeah, they say 12% unemployment. I'm thinking of my country, Haiti, where it's probably 12% employment rate. So, you know, it is what it is, yeah. But you have to look for opportunities. Sometimes you may have to be retrained in a different area, but it is what it is. You just have to make the best of it. So to answer your question, yes, it has impacted my business, but I am blessed and able to be able to maintain because I know a lot of colleagues who've had to close down their doors.
I've got a question to ask about, I know you're quite well aware of the bill signed into law by Governor Jan Brewer of Arizona, considered the nation's toughest bill on illegal immigration. Its aim, they said, was to identify, to prosecute, and deport illegal immigrants. What impact do you think that would have on Caribbean nationals in Texas if that law was enacted here in Texas?
Well, you're speaking of the law where the legislature is giving the police the authority to sort of assume who's illegal, who's legal, who's not.
Right, right. Absolutely.
That would have, I guess, if they would look at you or when you open your mouth, an accent comes. Oh, okay, so that would be probable cause that this person is not a legal immigrant, so let's investigate further. And it would have an impact on Caribbean people here. Because the language is so vague that I guess based on looks alone, I'm not sure if people can pick us based on looks alone, but we speak a different dialect, you know. So based on that, they would be able to, okay, this person is not from here, so let's say this is our particular target. I try not to get political. I do understand the legal reasoning for that particular law, but at the same time, as a Caribbean, as a foreigner, it's just the application that is so discretionary that it is too vague. If you were just to read the law as it's written, there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. It is basically the law in most states. But then is the application. You've given the police officers or the law authorities too much power to try to determine who's here legally or who's not here legally.
Thank you. Rosalind, can you again tell our audience how we can reach you? Because I think you have provided us with some very valuable information here that someone may want to further contact you to get more information.
Sure. If they want to contact me, they can call 281-857-9335. Once again, the number is 281-857-9335. Law office is located on Fondren off 59. The physical address is 10103 Fondren, Suite 400, Houston, Texas 77096. If they want to know more about HERO, the nonprofit organization which I founded, they can go onto our website, which is herotoday.org. We are asking as many listeners as possible to see what they can do to help us. If it's to sponsor one child education, we would appreciate that. As we mentioned, for only $25 a month, you can really help us make a big impact in the lives of these children in Haiti.
Okay. I'd like to thank our special guest tonight, Attorney Rosalind Alexis, for being such an inspiration to us. Thank you for joining us today. We hope you enjoy the show and that it inspired at least one person to pursue their dreams. Rosalind has defied great odds and is what I call a success story. You too can overcome obstacles in your life and be a beacon to someone. My name is Lucia Bates, President of Caribbean American Heritage Foundation of Texas, and principal of LB Marketing Solutions. We'd love to hear from you. Please email us at caribscene@gmail.com. We would also like for you to support our sister station, PepePromotions.com, the Island Groove Show, which comes on Saturdays, 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Central Standard Time at CaribbeanVibesRadio.com. And for additional information, you can go to CaribbeanHeritageTexas.org. Thanks for tuning in. Until next time, warm wishes to you. Good night.